Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
Down the line, none of the roadmaps that have been agreed to be delivered have been delivered. And everybody knows this. At the end of the day, people are just paying for what they don't consume.
The Nigeria Labour Congress is calling for a reversal of the privatization of the power sector.
We've actually been championing the fight against COVID-19. We've also attracted different organizations who have given us funding regarding some of the supplies for health facilities.
The Zambia Association of Sisterhoods, a faith-based group, steps up efforts to educate citizens about the coronavirus and its variants.
Casualties from the fighting have also risen to 44 people killed and 111 people injured. The vast majority of new arrivals into Chad are children, and 98% of the adults are women.
And a new cycle of intercommunal clashes over scarce resources in Cameroon forced tens of thousands of people to flee. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The Nigerian Labour Congress, or NLC, says the privatization of power generation has failed to meet its objective. The group is now calling on the government to reverse the policy after a review. This after contending that promises of an efficiently run system, reduced costs, as well as reliable power supply to homes, businesses, and industries have failed to live up to expectations. Ayuba Waba, president of the Nigerian Labour Congress, says Nigerians have been paying more after privatization, adding that electrical power remains unstable and unreliable. His remarks follow a meeting of the national executives of the NLC. Nigerians routinely say they pay high prices for energy even when there is no power supplied. They also say they are forced to rely on generators as a last resort for reliable electricity to their homes and businesses. Ayuba Waba tells me that a holistic review by the government and all stakeholders will lead to a reversal of the power privatization policy and introduce measures for solving Nigeria's challenge of supplying and distributing power.
Before the privatization, a lot of promises were made that power delivery is going to be stable, is going to be affordable, and basically generation is going to increase. 6 months down the line, nothing has changed. In fact, it was said that investors are going to come in, invest their resources, and bring their expertise. But what happened at the end of the day is that some people borrowed money from our commercial banks, thinking that it's a money-spinning venture, and they acquired the power sector without adding any value. As we speak, the generation have not increased. It's hovering still around the 4,000 megawatts. But what has happened is that people are paying more. Through estimated billing, a lot of consumers are being exploited. Whether you have light, you don't have light, you still continue to pay. And therefore, there is no service.
What in the privatization agreement that you think has been flouted or has not been met?
Everything has been flouted. One, the generation have not increased. Two, efficiency of service delivery have not been improved, and the price have continued to sour up. And continuously, people continue to pay exorbitant bills. Meters have not been provided for.
So you say the original purpose for which this policy was carried out has been defeated?
It hasn't been defeated because on three grounds. One, the fact that after privatization, government will no longer put its resources, that investors will bring in resources, improve services, and by so doing, the tariff can even go down. What we have seen over time is that government said it's still subsidizing. Subsidizing for who? After the sector had been privatized. Secondly, what I said is this continuous exploitation of consumers through electricity tariff hike, which has continued unabated, and most people now cannot even afford. But even for people to actually pay for what they consume wasn't possible because meters have not been provided. All efforts to provide meters for consumers have proved abortive.
Some people say that the federal government has not been good at managing And that is why the privatization was necessary to be more efficient, to supply more electricity to Nigerians. And that is what this is doing, just that there has to be a few more improvements. But you sharply disagree. Why?
Yeah, I said 6 years down the line, none of the roadmaps that have been agreed to be delivered have been delivered. And everybody knows this. At the end of the day, people are just paying for what they don't consume. And therefore, that is not the essence of privatization. Yes, if privatization is to bring efficiency, in this case, it has failed. And you cannot continue to go in the wrong direction continuously for 6-7 years without actually achieving a goal or arriving at a destination. So basically, it's better in reverse. We can look for better options, maybe better investors that can do that. Because even at the initial, at privatization, nobody came, no investor actually came to put in money to improve services. So as we speak to you, no value have been added. The transmission lines have not been improved upon. The generation and the distribution is very erratic. And these have been the whole issue, and everybody is complaining. What has remained constant is that people are paying exorbitant bills. So do we continue in this light? The obvious answer by NLC is no. We should actually retreat and look at where we went wrong. And therefore, we can now start a new endeavor all over again.
Do you see this call being adhered to, especially with your engagement with the other stakeholders about this reversal that you are calling for?
Many stakeholders are actually, I'm speaking their mind, because of the fact that the expectations have not been met, and particularly consumers. Every policy is about consumer satisfaction and service delivery. And power is very strategic in any economy to drive the process of manufacturing, the process of transformation. Power is very significant. It is very important in this fourth industrial revolution. But what we see currently is that if after 7 years after privatization, we are still hovering around a generation of 4,000 megawatts, you know that that is not something that can be defended anywhere. And basically, these have been a grouse. And many Nigerians. Let me also inform you that in the privatization clause, there is a provision that after 5 years, there should be a review process to see whether we have made progress or we are actually retaliating. So that time is now. And basically, we ought to have done that 1 year ago. So we are calling for that review. And therefore, I'm sure after the review process, there is need actually to reverse the entire privatization because it has failed.
Ayuba Wabba is the president of the Nigeria Labour Congress. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja. The president of the governing board of the ECOWAS Network of Electoral Commissions is calling on the heads of electoral boards in West Africa to demonstrate diligence and professionalism in their work. This, Dr. Maria do Rosario Goncalves says, will help stop concern over the reversal of democracy in West Africa. Dr. Goncalves is also the chairperson of the Cape Verde Electoral Commission. She spoke at a recent conference in the Ghanaian capital, Accra, themed an efficient communication strategy for enhanced relationships between electoral monitoring boards and other stakeholders in West Africa. Goncalves expressed concern that the current situation makes the task of electoral management bodies more difficult to restore public confidence and trust in the ability to administer credible, transparent, free and fair elections. In part two of my interview with her, Dr. Goncalves addresses issues including what officials of electoral commissions in West Africa can do to avoid disputes and ensure the credibility of polls. What do you think can the Electoral Commission officials also do to help ensure credibility in organized elections, including addressing concerns of opposition parties leading up to elections in the region?
Main and important thing they can do, or we can do, but essentially they can do through transparency, professionalism, inclusivity, and integrity in performance. There should also be impartiality in the handling of electoral disputes. I believe it is important that all candidates must be treated equally and with respect for the electoral laws and the national constitution. Above all, electoral official must behave in a dignified manners and must be fair but firm in dealing with all stakeholders so as to earn the trust and confidence of political actors irrespective of affiliations.
So what are your major concerns about the electoral climate in these West African countries that you think undermine efforts to organize credible elections?
I have to tell first that many progress have already done in our sub-regions in election issues. But we have also some concerns. For example, the non-respect and indiscriminate alteration of electoral laws and national constitutions are a major concerns. Term elongations, which is being resisted by the population and the military in some countries, is another problem. I believe that to achieve the consolidation of our election in West Africa, we must build robust democratic institutions first that guarantee the independence and autonomy of electoral bodies and the judiciary. The political space must also ensure respect for human rights, including political freedom, stable and transparent political and electoral system. We need social justice and peaceful transfer of political powers. But we believe that we are going and we will empower and consolidate our elections in our sub-regions. But we must continue to work together. Political parties have important roles, but also electoral management, but also.
Dr. Mario do Rosario Goncalves is the president of the governing board of the ECOWAS Network of Electoral Commissions. She spoke with me from the Guinean capital, Accra. In Lesotho, the Minister for Communication, Science and Technology says plans to remove and replace Prime Minister Moeketsi Majoro ahead of next year's general election has failed. Government spokesperson Chionyana Samrapapa says the administration in Maseru is reassuring citizens that the government will remain in office until elections are held next year. His remarks come after some members of the ruling All Basotho Convention, or ABC, say the Prime Minister is failing to address a number of challenges, including the high crime rate facing the Southern African Kingdom. But the Prime Minister's supporters say only a minority of ABC members want him to be replaced less than a year before the elections. They accuse the members of seeking to personally benefit to the country's detriment. They are urging the Prime Minister to continue with his work in spite of the small number of people seeking to remove him from office for what the supporters say are for selfish interests. In part two of this VOA interview, government spokesperson Chionyana Samrapapa talks to me about the end game of the ongoing public sector reforms. What is the end game of this ongoing political reforms? What do you want to achieve by that?
No, with the reforms, we want to. We have reforms in six or seven sections. There is economic reforms with the laws that would improve economy. There is also the other issue where there will be reforming the security structures, the civil service, parliamentary and constitutional reforms, the media reforms. So those reforms are at the stage where they are at their final stage, because even the reforms authority has extended the mandate up to April.
Are you assuring the people of Lesotho or Basotho that the government, as we have it now with the Prime Minister, will be intact ahead of next year's election?
No, I do give a guarantee, because you see,
This motion, the motion that can bring down the Prime Minister, cannot be entertained only up until April. And it will be disastrous to say that there should be a Prime Minister who will just act in the last 3 months before elections. So when I see things, I see that they can only they will only be able to do what they can call the government of national unity, which they were trying to promote today, or the vote of no confidence. It can only be done in the next parliament, because by the time we do it in May, we'll be dissolving parliament for the next elections.
So why do they want to remove the prime minister?
From the beginning, they did not want him to be the prime minister. So in short, they are still on that agenda to say we are removing him. They are trying everything. This is the fourth attempt. The first attempt was in August last year. They did not have the numbers. It was done in the party by the leader of the party, Dr. Thabane. In December, it was done in April by a vote of no confidence. And the last one was done recently in August. So this is not the first attempt. We have quashed all those attempts by maintaining our numbers.
What is the message here to the people of Lesotho or Basotho ahead of next year's election? Will the election come on Hindi?
The timetable is very clear that by May next year, or the latest the 13th of July, the parliament will have been dissolved. And the law says 3 months thereafter, in 90 days, you have what is called an election period. Then you hold an election on a particular day, which will be announced by His Majesty the King.
So we should expect that the King will be making an announcement early next year?
It will be in July, because he only has to make that announcement after dissolving parliament.
Tionyana Samrapapa is the Lesotho government spokesperson and the Minister for Communication, Science and Technology. He spoke with me from the capital, Maseru. Zambia Association of Sisterhoods, a faith-based organization, has stepped up efforts to educate citizens about the coronavirus and its variants using local languages. Project manager Sister Astrida Banda says the responses her group is receiving have been encouraging. She adds that the group has been sponsoring workshops featuring medical measures to help limit the spread of COVID-19 and its variants in parts of the Southern African country. This as the Zambian government calls on everyone to be vaccinated. According to the Zambia National Health Institute, nearly 17,000 have been fully vaccinated. Experts blame vaccine hesitancy and the inadequate supply of vaccines as major reasons for the low vaccination rate. To learn more about efforts of the Zambia Association of Sisterhoods to help stop the spread of the disease, I reached project manager Sister Astrida Banda in the Zambian capital, Lusaka.
So some of the achievements that we've had is that the program has been expanded to other towns of the country, to other provinces, where we are not only talking on the radio as a platform that we use to disseminate this information, but also doing outreach programs. We have sisters who have actually been championing the fight against COVID-19. We've also attracted different organizations who have given us funding regarding some of the supplies for health facilities. But we've also seen households adhering to the mitigation measures, because our organization is also targeting pregnant breastfeeding mothers. So I think that mothers are actually adhering to all the protocols. And before we experienced that, they used to be afraid going to the health facility.
How do you address issues of myths and misconceptions about the disease? Because I know in parts of Africa, people say the disease doesn't exist, it's a white man's disease and all that. How are you able to address some of these challenges?
So, as you might be aware, before the virus was new, our key messages were around sensitizing people on what it was and using our local language. But the time people understood what COVID was actually, and they knew how it spread and all that, we moved to a state now where they needed to get the vaccine and keep themselves safe, then also fighting all the myths around the virus. So then what we have seen over time is that through interaction with the people, showing them compassion, because the reality is that people are afraid because of so many myths surrounding the virus. Therefore, acting in fear usually does not bring about the desired goal. It might give us people getting vaccinated, but with little understanding, and that effect will not be really felt. So the approach has always been for us, for me in particular, is to use compassion towards these people who are still struggling to understand, to know how to best respond to how to keep themselves safe, if they're supposed to go for the vaccine or not. And basically, because most of the people in Zambia experienced the trauma of losing a loved one due to COVID, they might have been exposed and they suffered severely because of COVID-19. So they're still struggling to grieve through the processes that they went through. And so using compassion to journey with them, to tell them that even despite all this, they still hope. And they, even when they doubt, they can still bounce back and say, okay, I can still do this because I have understood that the vaccine will keep me protected. It will reduce severe illnesses in case I get COVID.
When you engage the public in terms of education, sensitization, and all that, how do you deal with different age groups in your engagement?
So what we've done is to find mentors and people who are co-champions in communities. So like we have volunteers who are working as promoters in our different communities. So they understand their settings better. So what we do is we begin with sales as promoters in different communities, receive the key messages, and then share with the community of volunteers within the communities who are not sisters. And then we have those who go to households to provide other health services. And always we ensure that COVID message is part of the health information, key message around whatever they are discussing for the day. Also ensuring that they are examples themselves, they are keeping to all the protocols, and ensuring that whenever there is a case of COVID within the community, they send a flag to the health facility, and therefore that community is aware that they need to stay safe and also increase on vigilance because there is a possible case of COVID.
Sister Astrida Banda is the project manager of the Zambia Association of Sisterhood, a faith-based organization. She spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. A new cycle of intercommunal clashes over scarce resources in Cameroon have killed and injured scores of people and sent at least 100,000 people fleeing from their homes. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
Just last week, the UN Refugee Agency reported intercommunal clashes that erupted December 5th in Cameroon's far north region had prompted 30,000 refugees to flee across the border into Chad in search of safety. UNHCR spokesman Matthew Saltmarsh says that number has nearly tripled over the past 2 weeks. He says fighting between herders, fishermen, and farmers over dwindling land and water resources has driven an estimated 85,000 people into neighboring Chad, while some 15,000 Cameroonians are displaced inside their country.
Casualties from the fighting have also risen to 44 people killed and 111 people injured. The vast majority of new arrivals into Chad are children, and 98% of the adults are women.
This compares to a casualty toll of 22 dead and 30 wounded during the last cycle of intercommunal violence. Fighting among the pastoral, farming, and fisher communities has worsened because of the climate crisis. Growing desertification over the last few decades has resulted in limited access to water and land for grazing and farming. Competition for these diminishing resources has led to more frequent and more brutal clashes. Saltmarsh says victims of these altercations are in dire need of life-saving assistance. He says the UNHCR is rapidly scaling up its operations to help affected people in Cameroon and new refugees in Chad.
Refugees are in dire need of shelter, blankets, mats and hygiene kits. Some are being generously hosted by local communities, but most are still sleeping out in the open or under trees. Many of the displaced report difficulties finding safe water and have no access to latrines. Concerning hygiene issues are on the rise.
Saltmarsh says money to finance this expensive operation is in low supply. He notes just over half of the $240 million needed to support humanitarian operations in Cameroon and Chad has been received. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Douglas Impuga, and that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs, and music from our African collection. But first, meanwhile, separatists fighting to create an English-speaking state in Western Cameroon have described as grossly one-sided a rights group report that says that separatists attack schools, train children as fighters, and have deprived at least 700,000 children from having education since 2017. Human Rights Watch also says government troops organized abusive counterinsurgencies that affected education. For VOA, Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from the Cameroonian capital, Yaoundé, where thousands of children who have fled the English-speaking regions relocated.
21-year-old Kingsley Weba warms up the engine of his motorcycle taxi as he gets ready to work in Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé. Weba says his hope of having education was shattered when separatists called Amber Fighters torched his school in Kumbo, an English-speaking northwestern town, in 2017.
Some of these Amber Fighters come and attack the school, threaten our teachers, beat you up. One day I went to school, the fighters came, attacked one part of the school and had it burned down. There was no way for us to continue school there. I didn't live alone. Thousands of students left. Even teachers ran away.
Wilbur said his father was killed in 2017 during a gun battle between separatists and government troops in Kumbo. He said he drives a motorcycle taxi each day to be able to take care of himself and his younger sister in Yaoundé. 18-year-old Stella Monye says she also escaped from Kumbo in 2017. Monye says her parents decided to send her to Yaoundé to get an education after she was abducted along with 200 other school children in Kumbo.
The Amber boys came in and ordered all of us to follow them. We trekked around 13 kilometers in the bush. We had no water to drink, nothing to eat. Our parents contributed money and we were released, but we were really tortured in the bush.
In the report, Human Rights Watch says attacks on education have become a hallmark of the crisis in Cameroon's Anglophone regions. The report says separatist groups have killed, beaten, abducted and terrorized hundreds of students and teachers in the Anglophone regions. Human Rights Watch says separatists attack and torch school buildings, use schools as their bases and camps to store weapons and munitions, and to torture and hold people hostage. The rights group's Central Africa researcher, Ilaria Alegrozi, quotes the UN as saying that 700,000 Cameroonian children have been deprived of education since 2017. She spoke to VOA via a messaging app.
Separatist groups are robbing an entire generation of children of their fundamental right to education. Attacks on education have also led to forced displacement of teachers and students, and also to early pregnancies after students drop out and child labor.
But separatists have described the report as grossly exaggerated. Capo Daniel, deputy defense chief of the separatist group Ambazonia Defense Council, says the military also carries out attacks on education.
The report of the Human Rights Watch is completely one-sided. It failed to mention specific incidents where Cameroon military have attacked schools within our territory. There are the incidents in CPC Bali, where Cameroon government troops rounded the entire school and made children to lie in mud. There are many instances that Cameroon government have burned down schools, including the partial burning of Sacred Heart College.
However, the Human Rights Watch report says that government troops have often been brutal in responding to the threats posed by separatist groups. It says the Cameroon military carries out abusive counterinsurgency operations leading to the killing of civilians and the burning and destruction of property. Ale Grozi says both separatist fighters and government troops should stop attacking schools, which she says are supposed to be safe havens in times of violence. Cameroon's military has denied that its troops attack schools and kill civilians. Various separatist groups in Cameroon have always blamed each other and the military for attacking schools. Human Rights Watch calls on the government of Cameroon to address the current climate of impunity and ensure that those responsible for attacks on education are held accountable. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Douglas Mpuga. Hello, Douglas.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. Algeria won their maiden Arab Cup with a 2-0 win against Tunisia on Saturday in Qatar. The tournament served as a World Cup dress rehearsal for Qatari organizers. The African champions needed 99 minutes to find the opener through Saoud against a strong Tunisian side. With the last kick of the game, Algeria wrapped up the 2-0 victory in the 125th minute to deservedly become champions. The two-week tournament replaced the Confederations Cup as a warm-up event for the World Cup. The African continent had six representatives at the tournament that was last staged in 2012, but revived by FIFA in an expanded 16-team format to include more participants from across the Arab world and test Qatar's readiness for the World Cup. Both Sudan and Mauritania were eliminated, bottom of their group, but Morocco emerged as strong contenders, scoring 9 goals without conceding to be one of 4 teams alongside Qatar, Algeria and Egypt to progress unbeaten from the first round. Algeria's Arab Cup victory reinforces their credentials to defend the Africa Cup of Nations title in January when they start their campaign against Ivory Coast, Equatorial Guinea and Sierra Leone in Group E. Meanwhile, only fans who have been fully vaccinated against COVID-19 and have proof of a negative test in the run-up to a game can attend January's Africa Cup of Nations in Cameroon. The organizers said in a statement that the tournament has been reconfirmed as going ahead between January 9th and February 6th. Supporters can only access stadiums for Nations Cup matches if they are fully vaccinated and present a negative PCR test within 72 hours or a negative lateral flow test within 24 hours. Testing, according to organizers, will be available on all sites during the competition. And in athletics, World Athletics has released its 2022 Labor Road Race calendar. The schedule comprises almost 200 races in more than 40 countries across each of the sport's six areas. The calendar kicks off with the 10-kilometer Valencia in the Spanish city on January 9th and concludes almost 12 months later on December 31st with the traditional New Year's Eve races in Madrid, Spain and Bolzano, Italy. The three-tier program, introduced in 2020, comprises three labels: a World Athletics label, a World Athletics Elite label,
and a World Athletics Elite Platinum label. And that's about it for this edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Douglas. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. Let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under-Secretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. Despite its best efforts by the international community, concerns continue about the jihadist threats in the Sahel region. And now France, the country which has previously taken up the challenge to tackle the jihadists, has just completed the withdrawal of its last military post in the north of Mali. And while the inhabitants of northern Mali are now worried about their security because of France's withdrawal, those in the capital, Bamako, are protesting France's involvement in Mali and calling for their withdrawal. The French government has made clear it will withdraw most of its military troops from Mali, and it has been appealing to its European allies to fill in the gap in security. Yesterday, the foreign minister of Mali announced that Chad, another country in the Sahel that has been battling the jihadists, would soon send 1,000 troops to meet this gap. Therefore, together with the 13,000 United Nations troops in Mali, that will now be 14,000. At the same time, the United States last week raised concerns of the possibility of the deploying in Mali Russian private military group called the Wagner Group in Mali. There is also concern about what role the United States could play in meeting these jihadist threats. It has been suggested that the U.S. could provide air support from its base in Niger and also provide intelligence for operation. There has been no firm commitment from the United States. One could see that this patchwork of security arrangements needs to be reviewed and provided more durable security arrangements for this strategic region. In this regard, it is time for the Security Council to review its continued reluctance to support regional peacekeeping forces that it is without its firm command and control. The African states, through its regional arrangements, have already demonstrated that it could play a role. Don't forget the role of ECOMOG in preserving security in Sierra Leone and Liberia. Also recall that SADC is now playing a role in northern Mozambique, as well as the OAU has done in the past. All of these have been done by the Africans themselves with only minimal support from the Security Council. They can perform the task, but they are deficient in logistic support and financing. Accordingly, African states in the Security Council to make it as their major goal next year, to insist that the Security Council listen to the frequent demands of the General Assembly for support to regional peacekeeping operations in Africa. Africans are willing and able to contribute to the preservation and maintenance of peace and security in its region. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. Baby, you're busting my brain. Baby, you take over me, boo. You make me dancing, calypso's for you, my lover. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect, a flashback with music from the continent. Baby, you know I love you like seriously. So baby, don't stop loving me. Oh, na 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 na. This is a song for all the girls. All the girls in the building. Na 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 na. Yeah. Baby, show me, tell me what you think about this. I keep singing, telling people what you mean to me. If it wasn't for you, don't know what my life would have been. Darling, you're so true, and there's nothing I won't do. So I go day day for you, spend them for you, and keep them for you. I go clean them for you, design them for you, till I make them for you. So I go day day for you, spend them for you, and keep them for you. I go clean them for you, design them for you, till I make them for you. Baby, you're passing my brain. Baby, you take over me. Oh. You make me dancing calypso's for you, my love. I will do anything. Mama, I'm not gonna make you fall so far. Baby, you know I love you like seriously. So baby, don't stop. Yes. One, baby, I want you to strip down, shake up your bum bum. Two, if I spend my money, will you dance for me? Three, scatter the place like a upline Corona. Four, if I give you something, will you be there, baby? Oh, ciao. Panama, one to do your Panama. Every day I dey keep on doing my Panama, baby. Love you, you love me, Panama. Ah, Jack, yeah, oh, Panama. Oh, I love you, sweetie, Panama. Dancey, dancey for me, oh, Panama. I love you, baby, oh, my sweetie, Panama. Baby, you're passing my brain, oh. Baby, you take over me, oh. You make me dance in calypso for you, my love. I will do anything. Mama, I'm not gonna make you fall so far. Baby, you know I love you like seriously. So baby, don't stop loving me. Not alone, that woman, I'm damn too sexy. Every day you are gonna drive me crazy. Me not gonna left your body, no, no. Every night, I'm on a battlefield more. Are you alone? No, I feel do it. Tenderness, you make me body complete. Put it down from the bed, come down to the floor. In the bathroom, like a back up on the wall. They love me after you, woman, and never. You know, say it's a perfect blending. Don't make me love you up till early morning. I love you so bad, you can take all my money. Good boy, now I have no room for regrets. Now I have no shoes in my closet. After shall love, I saw the thing set. You wicked and bad, so glad we connect. Baby, you passing my brain. Baby, you take over me. Oh. You make me dancing calypso's for you, my love. I will do anything. Baby, you know me, mama. I know gon' make you fall so far. Baby, you know I love you like seriously. So baby, don't stop loving me. Baby, you're passing my brain, oh. Baby, you take over me, oh. You make me dancing calypso's for you, my love. I will do anything. Baby, you know me, mama. I know gon' make you fall so far. Baby, you know I love you like seriously. So baby, don't stop loving me. Yeah, J.R. alongside Negadon. Anything just for you.
is nice, the body's banging. The time is right, I see the money coming. I just the bright, now God they make me shine.
Gotta say, oh, Tito, Medu Major be mosquito. Mo fellow, oh, daddy me. I do run out of the daddy me. Kinu wama do top body me. I go on a book, carry me. Inu lava, oh, July. Jungle lava, no party me. Meanwhile, my co, yeah, I carry. Bile, oh, be you, oh, party. We talking international money, yeah. And my bear, I'm falling there. Mo go fellow, oh, daddy me. Kiro Rama, shave, I me, yeah.
Everything is nice, the body's banging. The time is right, I see the money coming. I just the bright, now God they make me shine.
That's why they call me a butter. Low top, no shower butter. Kito blue, but why need a gutter? Oh, yeah, come on, me, Jogumi. Shots, I'm not a Jumi. Like, I'm not a lot of money, mommy. The shell, do I call it sue me? But for God, I'm a baby, look for me. Oh, you're me, love, I want to be boomy. I'm not fear, I thought of it for me. Like, so, do I yield by boomy? Oh, what they can't you really shit? Oh, do I need to come out of this shit? You want to come, I need more people. Reminisce to be the whole back with.
Everything is nice, the body's banging. The time is right, I see the money coming. I just the bright, now God they make me shine.
Kupigania, afande sirwana na wipe, nanirira kwe, jiru Mukagwana niwe Mukagwana nirira iwe
Apande patyalwe mtedi Apande atyalwe mpiri Pingo ite goya goya Balabela dui nini nini Apande chana diye ni Inubiru chana diye Why you really want to keep your people down? Vyote unafanya Una wakati wakulipa Chote unapanda Diye utavuna Bangi baba deo Ngakwe boliwo Wewe wale sobiza Bola buse Apande sipigani nawe Nakupigania Sipigani nawe lakini nakupigania Apande sirwana nawe Be manirira kwe Kirwana niwe Mukagwana nirira iwe Masikini Atoki alika ni mama inji ya kole Why? Wadoba kubira girona e na uli mtu Embele zitunyika Na weze zikunyika Osula bube, ofona bube Na bantu bona bubali bube Menyoge la kongo, neme la kona Yenga chichenjo Afande sipigani na we Na kupigania Sipigani na we lakini na kupigania Apande sirwana na we be Manirira kwe Kirwana niwe mukagwana nirira iwe Apande sipigani na we Na kupigania Sipigani na we lakini na kupigania Apande sirwana na we be Manirira kwe Kirwana niwe mukagwana nirira iwe
Ngoma kali ufanya na kumbusha Kenya Vile kisaili ni kitamu Au siyo Nyota Nyota
Choka mimi kukupenda Watakao sema na waseme Wengi wakiyaona kwa macho Machozi atoka kila siku Sito choka mimi kukupenda Watakao sema na waseme
That was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we're on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, Managing Editor William Eagle, Reporter Douglas Impuga, and Producer Nicole Beckford, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, an old poacher makes the best gamekeeper. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.